Hey, Sox fans, welcome to Good Guys Talk Back, a local fan-centric Chicago White Sox podcast, hosted by Nick Borowski and Pat Hester.
Hey, Sox fans, welcome back to Good Guys Talk Back. Hey, this is episode 261. I am Nick Morawski. This is a fan-centric Chicago White Sox podcast. We do this weekly. We do this live on Sunday nights on the Good Guys Talk Back YouTube channel. Please join us. Jump in the comments. Give us your overreactions because that's where we're at right now, three games in. Going to talk about spring training so far. Jerry Reinsdorf needing this stadium badly to compete. The new play-by-play man for the Chicago White Sox, what we think about that and so much more. Pat Hester, you're along for the ride one more time. We've got actual baseball to talk about, sir.
Dude, it's great. We've made it again. Like I said, last week we talked about we made it through another winter. We're excited about the year. I know we are. We and I broke some bread last night together and talked about how excited we are for the season to start, how excited we are to see Gavin Sheets continuing to get run and be bullish in right field. And you did bury the lead, Nick. It's Jerry Reinsdorf's birthday today. He turns 88.
Is he?
Happy birthday to Jerry Reinsdorf. Please send him a gift. Obviously, he is in need. Someone, you know, you look at these people that, you know, really are struggling to get by. And I feel very badly for Jerry that he's really rubbing two nickels together in a day in and day out basis. So if you see Jerry, give him a gift. Whatever you have on you is fine. A dollar will help, quarters, anything. But happy birthday to the curmudgeon and the cheap ass Jerry Reinsdorf.
Did you say he's 88?
88 is what I saw on social media today. Not old enough.
I was just going to say Blackhawk legend Kaner, number 88, making some headlines today.
Yeah.
With the overtime goal for the Red Wings and spoiling the Chelios banner raising. So double eights. I think about maybe a leather jacket cleaner for Jerry. He's got that nice sharp leather jacket he wore to Springfield.
It's inside out if it rains.
Get him some of that leather cleaner and a sham. And so he's got that jacket ready to go for all of his important meetings asking for money. Want to welcome Greg and Peyton in. Thank you so much. Jump in on the comments. We're going to get to Reinsdorf and we're going to get to some of the spring training stuff. I don't know where you wanted to start, Pat, if you want to start actual games, but Sox. Here as we record, three games into the Cactus League, 1-2, lost on Friday, that first game against the Cubs. It was a miserable game. That was televised. Saturday was televised as well. Won that on a walk-off against the Mariners, 8-7. And then on Sunday, a rough one, skunked by the Diamondbacks, the team they kind of want to emulate and become, 5-0. Almost got no hit. So we can kind of go through the line. Did you catch any of the games?
I didn't. I didn't
there aren't much. A lot televised. So it's like when they're on TV, you gotta watch it.
Yeah. We were just going through it before we start recording my busy schedule. I haven't had an opportunity to sit down and take in a lot of the games so far. But, you know, you're watching it. I'm watching from afar and just staying caught up at this point because – it is what it is. It's a bunch. We've got 70 people in camp, Nick. So there's going to be a lot of guys getting some run and getting looked at right now. I think the most disturbing thing is you're out of the gate the first game and you don't walk. You don't take a walk. So hopefully we can start to take some of the ideas of taking pitches and actually moving this offensive like state of mind into something more modern and getting guys on base. That would be nice. So let's start that. We've got guys already loafing and not being aware of what to do, or not hustling and not throwing the ball and arguing with umpires when guys are taking bases. So these are the things. Let's flush it. Flush those couple of things out. The new guys will understand what that means very quickly. I'm sure they'll hear a lot of flushing it soon. You flush a couple of those bad games out, And you look at the positives. Moose Moustakas, right? Nice catch. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
They have the moose is loose. And I'd like to see. What were your thoughts on seeing Gavin Sheets 2 out of 3 days in right field, Nick? Does that give your heart some type of palpitation that this is actually going to be seen? And it's almost like it was last year with Oscar Colas. This is his job to lose.
They're going to give him playing time. They almost like they just have to give him playing time. It's almost like that's the rule, right? Major league rule. You've got to field the team in 2024. So the Sox are like, okay, we've got to put guys out there. For Gavin Sheets, it's like, well, he's going to have to get playing time here in early spring. I feel like there's enough guys in camp that, you know, he might not have a spot. He might be the odd man out. He just doesn't fit the mold of what Pedro Grifol has talked about and Chris Getz has talked about on how they want to play. But, you know, he might have a great camp. You know, he might in the time that he has, Sheets might, you know, hit a half a dozen bombs and you know, get on base and see the ball and be more selective and look like he has turned the corner with his conversations with White Sox legend Jim Thome, who was in the dugout consulting with players. Maybe that is gone his way.
Can I stop you there?
Sure.
I get it. Jim Thome had a cup of coffee really with the Chicago White Sox. Yep. One of the most memorable home runs in White Sox history, though, one of them. Why do people hate on him so much?
Because
everybody loves to like throw the legend. Jim
I Thome. Think it's just and funny I, that, you know, it's been used as like the legend, White Sox legend, like Jim Thome, which
he's a legend, but not
a White Sox. He is a legend, but
he's a baseball legend.
I mean, I just would say that because he's stuck around the organization. And because, yes, who he is and that he played for a little while and did have that home run and had his 500th home run, right, in a White Sox uniform, that he's all of a sudden become like this, you know, this team, this organizational legend, which he hasn't. Like, those were fun years and he had a couple fun moments. But, like, anytime they have some sort of fundraiser or gala or event or whatever, it's always like, Jim Thome's right there, the legend, you know, and I it's still weird to me because you and I grew up watching Jim Thome punish the Chicago White Sox in a Cleveland uniform.
Yeah.
You know, so it's tongue in cheek, but I think if you didn't see Jim Thome with Cleveland, because you were maybe too young and you just caught him when he was with the White Sox, maybe you have a different feeling. Maybe it's an age thing. I don't know.
Well, anyway, I didn't mean to derail you. I don't even know if you remember where you were going, but it just always strikes me when people just go out of their way.
You brought up Gavin Sheets, so I started going down. Yeah, you're right. Thing,
oh, yeah. Okay, so let's reset.
And Gavin Sheets got his, 2 minutes there? So I think we're done.
We're done with that part. Good. I just wanted to get out of the way. I just thought it was curious. Yeah. Again, 2 out of 3 games starting in right field. Are we going to be force-fed him on opening day? So
no way. No, we won't.
You want to bet?
I'll make a bet.
How about
with
a sandwich
privately?
Between you and I? A sandwich?
Sure.
Yeah.
A sandwich and a drink?
Well, you better give me odds then.
Okay. We'll talk about that.
All right.
Welcome, Matthew, Howard, Brian. Howard, thank you. Howard gave me a compliment on the cap I'm wearing on the hat. I don't know if you can see this. This is the new, I think it's they're calling it the batting practice hat or the clubhouse hat. Mm-hmm. And I used to have a hat like this with the diamond with the white sock in it years ago. We're talking when you and I were college, and it was one of those like flex hats, and I loved it. Yeah. And it just like, it faded. It just was, and I could never find another design. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, this year, this design, it happened to be the diamond. They wear the patch, you know, they're wearing the patch in spring training on the sleeve with the white sock in it. And I love it. I love the look. And So I don't care for the spring training hat. I don't care for the gray with the, you know, I miss the one that they had last year and even a couple of years ago with the Hitman that didn't have the SOX. It was just like the chopped Hitman logo. I don't care for the gray, but it's a clean look. I love this like clubhouse hat here, Pat.
It's great. You know what they might want to think about doing? You're talking about all the patches they have. Should they put a patch on their crotch to cover up the see-through pants?
those pants.
Do we need to add an extra patch over the crotch for these players?
And those uniforms are just, they're silly. They look terribly cheap. I mean, those pants look like the see-through pants that you'd get if you go to, you know, years ago, or you probably even now, if you go to Dick's Sporting Goods or, you know, Sport Mart or Sports Authority, and you just got like, I just need some baseball pants, you know, or some softball pants. And they're just basically transparent and you can see, you know, absolutely everything. You see your jersey tucked in and you could see like, you know, if you're wearing a jack strap, the straps in the back, it was like, this is just a bit, the thin pants. And sometimes they would just tear when you're sliding. They look terribly cheap, and the uniform, the little, you know, chiclet, you know, name and the small, I'm sorry. I'm not a huge jersey guy. You know, I don't go out and buy like the, you know, the player jerseys. I've got a few, but those are just, you know,
you got to do better than I thought they looked like they were typed on by like an old timey typewriter, just little tiny letters.
Yeah.
But anyway, I digress.
Yeah.
Thank God I don't have to wear them. As long as I don't have to wear them, then I'm good.
That could be a bet. That could be a Gavin Sheets.
I could walk around, like go to work one day with the see-through baseball.
I mean, if you want to take Gavin Sheets, you think he's going to be the right fielder on opening day, and he's not, then you have to wear the new baseball pants on the train to work and throughout your whole day. You've got to wear this pair of pants. And just
I didn't make him in my size. Let's move on.
Nice.
I only would wear the game worn like Mo Vaughn pants. That's the only ones I could get into.
Yeah, the Mo Vaughn pants. Excuse me, shopkeeper. If you could point me to the Mo Vaughn section of all jerseys, jackets, and sweatshirts.
That's where I need to shop, Nick.
All right. So, hey. Friday, the first game of spring training, it was an 8-1 loss to the Cubs. Why it stung for me, because it was the Cubs. You know, I don't think I talk about this enough, how much I hate the Cubs. And it was that was just how we started the Cactus League. Jesse Chavez was on the mound, and boy, that was something wild. You know, you're going to see a lot of relievers early on in spring training. Grifol talked about it. You're not going to see starters just quite yet, your established guys. And that's what we saw the first three games, just a bunch of arms that you might not even recognize, guys vying for reliever roles in all different shapes and sizes. And Chavez, who's been on, gosh, a dozen, if not more MLB teams, one inning, six hits, six earned runs, and that, you know, again, guys are working on stuff. It was the first game, but it was like after the offseason.
That's what my first question would be after the game. So what exactly were you working on out there today? Six hits, six earned runs.
I just was looking, just, you know, trying to get it in the strike zone.
Did that many times.
Figure that out. Again, like, I don't know, not a good first impression, but I think that's how it's going to be with this team for a little bit. You know, guys are vying for, they're playing for their life. Some of these guys are like, this is my last shot. You know, I'm trying to hang on. Guys are, you know, in situations they're, you know, up the middle, DeJong and Lopez, they started on Friday, and that's chemistry right there. Your shortstop, your second baseman, the transfer, just the language, the, you know, all that is going to have to come in time. It's been sloppy the first three games, you know. Saturday had a bunch of errors. You know, we can get into the Martin Maldonado stuff. You know, Saturday was the walk-off, and Corey Lee had the go-ahead home run in the seventh, the go-ahead a single in the eighth. There's seven catchers in camp. This was something from Pedro Grifol.
Does Pedro know you can only have one catcher on the field? Yeah,
no one's putting a limit on how many bodies I can have in camp. I want everybody.
Don't really care about right field. Can I swap out the right fielder and have an extra catcher?
You know, he might need to get creative with how things are going here. This was Grifol and all the catchers. This is my 33rd professional season. I've yet to see a roster with seven catchers. Martin Maldonado, Max Stacy, Lee, Corey Lee, of course, Chucky Robinson, Edgar Caro, Carlos Perez, Adam Hackenberg. I haven't yet to see a roster with seven catchers of this potential, of this caliber. This is a really good core. So Caro, who is pinch hitting for Oscar Colas, he had your game winner, a walk-off single against the Mariners. And there was some problems, though, with Maldonado, who probably was going to be your starter, right? Unless something goes terribly wrong, unless more of this stuff happens, although we can debate if this was a big deal or not. Catcher Martin Maldonado didn't run hard on a little comebacker between the mound and first base line against the Cubs on Friday. And he stood up to the team the next day. He said, "I didn't come out of the box the way I should have come out of the box. I want to lead by example." This is what Grifol had to say about Maldonado not running hard in the first Cactus League game. The optics of it, they weren't good. And it doesn't take a baseball purist to see that. If the optics aren't good, it's not good. That's not who we are. Now, Pat, did you see the whole acronym, the FAST acronym, yeah. FAST, that Grifol put out there? Grifol talking about playing fast during camp. It's an acronym for fearless, aggressive, selfless, and technically sound. So right away, Maldonado not paying attention to the FAST mantra.
I would say ask how like these types of things work with like professional athletes, right? These like the Bears had it, right? Eberflus had the hits principle. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't really resonate. I don't know. It seems a little hokey to me. Whatever. It's fine. Fast. Let's play fast. Let's be great. It'll be fantastic. Can you just field the ball and can you run the bases properly? Can you do those little things? Whatever you have to use to kind of get guys in the right frame of mind, I guess is great. It's just, I don't know. It just seems hokey coming from him. Someone that you don't believe in or really trust that can do this job, right? That you're coming out with these things and do guys kind of like roll their eyes at him. I don't know. What do you think of it? It just seems a little strange to me.
I mean, whatever works, you know, his dime, his dance floor, if this is how he wants to run it in his second year. And he's like, you know what? I didn't have enough acronyms in my first year. And I think that's what we really needed. I needed things that stood for things. And I needed, you know, just things to like for us to remind each other or check in or I don't know, you know, and but, you know, that's going to be something that we as fans are going to be paying attention to. And, you know, it's just going to be a running joke. It already is. You know, when you botch things, like I think a situation happened today on Sunday's game with Maldonado and DeYoung and, you know, lapses. You're allowing the opposition to take bases on you. It's early. But all of this is overreaction, you know, because this is what we have right now. Yeah. So we are, as just fans that are diehard, that are dedicated, we are going to overreact. Is it ridiculous? Mm-hmm. Yes, but I'm here for it. You know, yeah. I mean, and you know, we don't get to see a lot of games. You know, I'll be going down in a couple weeks in person to see Tim Hill and other Cactus League legends, I'm sure by that time play, but you don't get a lot of TV time.
Yeah.
So when you see stuff, you know, you kind of overreact on it. So
do you think that it's just us looking at it with this this skewed view on the team just because we're so jaded? The offseason was, you know, maybe one of the worst off seasons that we've had in quite some time in terms of there was no action. There was no real hope given to fans. There wasn't a Sox fest for a third straight year in a row. But is this happening around baseball, do you think, and other people, other fans that have good teams to root for? They're just like, I'm not worried about it. It's the third game of spring training. Half of these guys aren't going to be on the major league club in a month. I'm not going to worry about it. Is it only us, or do you think other fan bases, or maybe some fan bases of teams that are supposed to win this year, you know, are looking at it differently than you and I would? Because like I said, I get upset when the first game that they don't take a walk. I'm upset that they had five errors in a game. I'm upset that the guys that are veteran guys are doing silly things on the diamond and you know, having and causing, you know, a reaction to have to stand up and apologize to your teammates. It seems
I don't know if he's not gonna run down a veteran late in the game. With the track record that we've had of guys pulling hamstrings and all this other stuff, and as a catcher who's probably number one on the depth chart right now, I it's not a big deal to me. I mean, maybe that's like a conversation that he has with Grifol. Like, you know, it's the first game, you know, I'm just, and maybe Grifol said something like, I don't care if it's the first game or not, I need you going all out. I mean, Colas went all out on one, and he, you know, he called himself safe as he was hustling down the line to beat out a throw, and he called himself safe. And it reminded me of when Cactus League legend from last year, who was quickly, you know, shown exit stage right during the season, and I'm blanking on his name.
Is it Alfred, like, Roberto?
Oh, you owe me 10 pushups for bringing up his name. You know,
I can't. Can I do like the the ones on my knees? I can't do like a real 10. I can't do 10 real pushups. Are you kidding me? That'd be the end of my life.
Yeah, I don't want to do that to you because I need to get that meal from you. Alberto in the season last year, he was running to first base hard, and he called himself safe, and he like did something to his shoulder. He like popped his shoulder out of its socket. So to Colas, I'm like, hey man, I love the hustle, but maybe we shouldn't be calling ourselves safe because there could be
just,
I saw Robert hustle down the line as well. Aloy hit the ball in the screws a couple times, which was nice to see. There's a left-handed pitcher named Luna. I think that was his name. He has a pickoff move to first base that is outstanding. He has an excellent pickoff move, very deceptive. It's pretty much a balk, but I mean, if you're going to do a good pickoff move, you kind of have to balk. You have to be very quick with it, man. You have to not allow, like, you can't even almost show like where your spike print was on the mound. When you lift your leg and you make that stride, you cut it at 45 degree angle. Okay. And I used to do this as a right-handed pitcher. I would pick off to third base. We had a little something with the third baseman. He would give me kind of like a little just pinch of the bill of the cap or a little tug on his jersey. And I would signal that I knew, and it was a timing play. And you lift your leg and then you stride, but you got to cut it at 45. You can't break the rubber. And then, you know, you're throwing the runner out at third. It could be technically a balk, you know, if an umpire's got a good angle on it. But if they're not paying attention, which is key, you're made in the shade. Same thing with a lefty going to first. And now Luna had a great move. I don't think he has any business making camp, but just for that move.
Just for the move, Jerry. That was great breakdown of how to pick off a guy at third, which never happens. But it was fantastic knowledge that you just gave me. I couldn't get out the old Luna commercial out of my head. 773-202 Luna.
Yeah,
that's what I would do if I'm Schriffen. If Luna makes his team, I'm going there. Anytime he strikes somebody out, 773-202. Boop 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 boop. Luna.
And that's what I want to see from Schriffen. Did you listen?
Show, Nick, you're breaking things down. Yeah. I'm thinking of the old Luna commercial.
Carpeting commercials. Did you see the reliever named Empire, Pat? He came in for a couple innings. No, Shriffin, did you listen to anything that he had? It was our first real exposure of him doing Sox games, of course. New to baseball as he is. I mean, this is a huge overreaction, you know, because he's only done two games that we've listened to. I mean, he's a professional broadcaster.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's going to take a lot of time for him, I think, especially for older Sox fans like you and I, to embrace him. Like, he's one of us. He's like, you know, he's part of the family, so to speak. You know, he's talked about, like, he's been open about it. Like, I don't know a ton about Chicago. I'm learning, you know, I'm trying to, you know, catch up on that. I've got to learn about the organization. I didn't grow up around the White Sox. You know, Hawk lived it. I mean, he was here for so long. He was part of all the major moments and stuff. And Benetti grew up a Sox fan. So yeah, he knew about all the little, just, you know, legends that have come through, all the moments that were big for Sox fans. And I think, you know, on the surface, you could know the moments, but all the little intricacies that only one would know if you've been around White Sox baseball for all your life, that's what he, and it's almost like penalizing him for something that he just can't do. But it's going to take some time, I think, for me to just feel like he's not just reading off cards and just reading off of like a Wikipedia thing, like that he, like, this is like a second language to him talking White Sox baseball.
It's going to be, it's a lot of, it's going to be like, you know, you get the, maybe the Fox team to come and do the Saturday, you know, Fox, you know, baseball. It's like you get that play-by-play guy that comes in and it's generic and it's going to sound like the guy that hasn't been around the team because he's doing a different, you know, team every week and he's preparing for that week and he doesn't know what's going on in social media or that, you know, maybe he talked about it on the radio. It's just going to be like, okay, here's the team, here's the players, this is where everybody's positioned, maybe here's a couple stories, some background, and boom. So that's what it's going to sound like for a while with him. You know, it's going to be this very generic, and as you mentioned, you know, it's a professional broadcaster. It's going to take time. He's not a homegrown guy. It's going to take some time. I'll give him time. I'm not going to rage over it, but it will be missed at times. It's going to be like, oh, you're going to kind of give him one of these. Oh, you should have maybe known that better, or you should be more well-versed in that. You're not going to pull that one over on White Sox fans. Sorry. But, you know, I'll give him time to grow into the position.
Absolutely. I mean, I saw a lot of stuff going around social media, and I've actually conversations with some family and stuff on Sunday about Shriffin, and what can you say about him? You know, the Sox obviously were after a professional broadcaster, and that's what he sounds like, you know, mm-hmm. like he sounds like he's safe. And it sounds like he and Stone have good rapport. I mean, unless it's just, you know, I'm imagining that. And I think ultimately that's what you would want, because they're going to be working side by side for so long, for so many games, for 6 months out of the year plus, that you got to have that chemistry, and that's going to take time. But if you like each other and you kind of just hit it off right away, that's a good thing. That's a good foundation. He just, and I hope he gets like a little bit out, like he got the job, right? He's not auditioning anymore. He's got the job. I hope he loosens up over time and just finds his own kind of personality, right? Like he finds his own phrases and cadence and like, you know, just have some fun with it, man. Like, this is your dream job. You got it. Sure, you're going to be under a microscope, you know, and I know you've got other gigs here and there, and you've got a future in the bigger, grander scheme of things. But I just, you know, find your voice, do you, and it's going to take some time to step out of Benetti's shadow, of course.
Well, and also know that you've got a Hall of Famer sitting next to you in terms of a guy that knows everything and everything about the game. So you can use him as a crutch as much as humanly possible. And Stone will love to take that. And I think his ego will be stroked enough to be like, I am the biggest fish in this pond. And I'm just going to let you know how smart I am. And as long as you let me talk enough, I'll let everybody else know.
So Schriffen had one call that I did hear that I think I saw Future Sox tweeted out, and it was on Moustakas, or man, who was making a over-the-shoulder catch in foul territory, and Schriffen went bananas. It was great. He did have a lot of energy there, so he's not saving his stuff for regular season. That was an energetic call on a catch in foul territory by a guy that shouldn't make the team, but might surprise us.
Can always use another first baseman, Nick. Why not? We'll have two catchers and two first basemen, no right fielder, and no second baseman.
Yeah, it's a Pedro Grifol camp. It's we need eight of everything, please. I don't want to be short on anything. You know, like I fear like someone will not get enough.
Going to shop at Costco. I need 4 gallons of mayonnaise.
Yeah, I get it. But you know, it was like fine. Hey, he did his job. He was serviceable, Schriffen. I mean, again, if Stone and him get along and there's chemistry, I mean, you know, it's just unfortunate that you and I and you know and others that you know were with Harry Carey and before Hawk, you know, you get to know these personalities, right? They become like almost part of the soundtrack of your life, so to speak. Your family, you're with them. They're in your mind, in your household every single night for 6+ months, and you get to know them. You're comfortable with them, and then they're gone. And so it's going to take some time, but it's not like he did anything to like hurt himself. It's just, you know, I think I'm going to be waiting for that. Like when I'm like, oh, wow, Schriffen is kind of stepping out of the comfort zone a little bit. And he's like becoming, you know, he's got his own kind of thing going on.
Well, I wish him the best. You know, it's what it's what we have. So we'll make the best of it.
He did not have a turtleneck on in his file photo, in his headshot, which he's got that thick turtleneck, which I appreciated because I would love for that to come back into style. He was not wearing a spring turtleneck. He just had like his regular NBC Sports Chicago polo, perhaps on.
There's time.
There is time for NBC Sports Chicago to get an embroidered turtleneck.
That would be sweet.
That would be something. Now you're talking about a personality. You know, Hawk used to have the cowboy hat and everything, and the hat that had Hawk on it. Schriffen could have, you know, just aviators and a turtleneck. And one of those cigarettes that like the Penguin had in the old Batman Adam West show. Hunter S. Thompson had it as well, kind of the cigarette holder.
Why don't more people use those?
When I have my show on Tuesday with Danny Miller, who smokes pretty much, which I love through the episode, I'm going to ask him if he's ever used one of those Penguin.
That'd be a nice gift. That'd be a nice Christmas gift for him.
For a smoker that is everything, it'd be just, you know, maybe you could be this guy that always shows up places and has one of those cigarette holders. It's there a good thought. So just trying to help Schriffen get kind of like a, you know, a look, you know, it's like I got a little bit of an edge. So Sox, you know, they lost to the Diamondbacks on Sunday, 5-0. Through three games now, Pat, through three Cactus League games, 9 runs for our White Sox, 14 hits, 11 walks, 26 strikeouts. Pitching wise, 15 walks and 21 strikeouts. So not quite that 2-1 ratio you'd kind of like to see. This was from Vinny Duber of CHGO, who's got some boots down in Arizona. The outcomes of spring training games are meaningless, but the Sox haven't looked great on either side of the ball so far in their Cactus League contest. There's a lot of them left before opening day. I was watching the game on Friday, which was the first game, and Steve Stone, you know, waxing on about how these games are pretty much meaningless and no one remembers who won Cactus League in 2023. And this is for guys that are not a shoo-in, obviously guys that are expected to make the club. It's obvious. It's like, just get your work in, you know, everything. But there's a lot of guys on this Sox team in camp that are fighting. they're absolutely fighting, clawing for a position. I think it's going to be like that throughout this entire end of February and through March, of course. But Stone, kind of bullish on our Chicago White Sox, said, I expect the Sox to be 10 games better than last year. How about that? 71 wins. How'd you feel about that comfy number?
Well, I mean, all right. Well, 71 wins. I mean, their win expectancy this year is what, 63.5?
Yes, I've seen anywhere from that to like 64 maybe.
So let's round up. Let's round up, right? Let's round up to 64. Could they potentially win six more games than they're projected to win in Vegas? Yeah, I think so. I don't think it's that outlandish. When you talk about improving, you know, by 10 wins, it's a 20 game swing, right? So that's kind of where you go, okay, that makes you think a little bit. Is this team really 10 games better than it was last year? Probably not, given the subtraction that has happened in the starting pitching particularly. You know, you went into last year with what you felt like a, you know, very heavy right-handed, but a pretty good starting staff, I would say, better than average. And I would say coming into this year, you're not feeling that way. So it's hard for you to maybe envision them being 10 wins better, but this still is baseball. I think there's if this fast mentality that Pedro's going to preach, and players actually glean to that, and they think, okay, we're going to do this much better. We're going to play fearlessly and aggressive and all that other crap. You know, they could potentially be better in the margins, right? And that could produce, you know, the 10 more wins that Stone's talking about. Now, it hasn't shown itself yet in the first three games, but I could certainly see that. Doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be in contention. They're definitely not going to be in contention at 71 wins. I don't think it's that out of the realm of possibility, to be honest with you. I think this team can be 10 games better too.
Yeah.
If you just cut down on a lot of the crap, you know, you're not going to out talent anybody. You're just not going to. You don't have enough talent on this team to go up against the better teams in the league.
You could outplay them though.
Yeah.
You can outsmart them. They could be outmanaged, and I say that with a straight face, even though I don't necessarily believe it. You know, they can be outcoached. Like this team we've talked about, to your point, if they rally around the fast or whatever else is Pedro's way, Gett's way, the new coaching staff, and they figure out what their identity is, and they figure it out early, and like, this is what we do. This is the type of game we play. We're not going to be able to be this team or that team because we don't have those types of players. And I kind of, I'm talking offensively, but I guess this can apply for defense as well. And if we do what we're supposed to do and can do to the best of our ability and don't beat ourselves and don't commit, you know, errors and give a team extra outs, that's where I could see there being that 10 plus. Maybe it's 12.
Yeah,
could it be up to 15? I mean, now we're starting to get a little weird and crazy. But I've seen it with other teams. You have too. We kind of saw it with Cleveland for a while in our own division. It's like, this team's not out homering anybody, like, but they play the way that they're supposed to, that they're molded for, and they play it really well. But they had the pitching though. You know, they've always got the pitching. That's where it comes back. I always come back to, but we just, you know, I haven't seen it yet. And maybe it'll materialize, but the starting pitching especially, you're going to see Nastrini go, I think, on Monday, who I'm kind of excited to see down the line. I don't know future-wise, like how soon he's ready, but you're going to see Nastrini on the mound. And you're going to see Crochet, I think, on the mound Tuesday. And that might be when Shohei Ohtani is going to be up against the White Sox. But you know, those are two guys. Crochet probably vying for something more immediately than Nastrini, but it's, you know, the pitching is what I keep going back to.
Well, and again, you're going to be watching a lot of guys that aren't going to be around once the season opens up. I don't know what to expect from any of these pitchers as we go, but I don't know. I really don't know what to say, Nick, because you're right. There isn't a lot to look forward to in terms of the pitchers. And when you have that as maybe your biggest Achilles heel, in my opinion, you could talk all day about the offense. And I know, you know, where's the offense going to come from? 7-8-9 is a black hole, Greg. I see you. But honestly, if you can't hold the other team from you know, scoring the 5 or 6 runs a game, you're going to have a hard time winning games. So, I'm kind of at a loss because you don't really know where to kind of what to bank on from a pitching standpoint. I guess you can obviously with Cease, but outside of that, you don't know really, you don't feel comfortable anywhere else.
Yet.
We
don't feel comfortable yet. Kopech, you know, we've been hearing a lot of great things about just the condition that he's in. Balls flying out of his hands. The reports were all over this past week, like, you know, from Katz and others of, wow, there's some velocity. You know, Kopech looks different. Something's going on with this guy. We've been, you know, that's been a running theme in any White Sox podcast for years. And maybe, you know, maybe Kopech he's figured it out. You know, there's just a lot of question marks still, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, we'll have more answers by the end of March.
I am interested to see what Crochet has to offer, you know, coming back and seeing where the velocity's at particularly. I don't really care about seeing too much from a breaking ball perspective in spring training. The ball's just not going to break like it's going to when they get back up here to Chicago. So with him, it's what's the velocity look like and what's the location, you know, look like in terms of where he's placing that fastball. Because if he's not throwing it, you know, triple digits like he was when he came up, he's got to be able to spot it. You can't just rear back and throw it right down the middle of the plate and hope that, you know, major league hitters aren't going to be able to hit it.
Yeah. You want to talk Jerry? You want to talk money and what he needs to compete? Because that was fun this past week.
Why not? Your topic, your favorite topic and mine, the owner of the Chicago White Sox, working hard when it means anything to line his pockets. The laziest person in the world when it comes to running an organization, unless it's to try and rob the people blind of their money.
I mean, you know, free agency after free agency, year after year, we've seen the White Sox, unless it was with Clevinger in last season, which still just, oh my, I still can't believe that went the way it went in terms of out of the gates of free agency. Anyway, year after year, dragging their feet, not going to throw the money, play at the top of free agency. They will not. But boy, when you need to get to Springfield because there are deadlines and you need to be asking for money because this is what you want, you're right there. Johnny on the spot. Mm-hmm. A lot of different articles, a lot of different things coming out. Again, this is a billion plus being asked for this village, essentially. It's more than just a stadium. It's everything else that's going to be around the stadium, that plot of land, the Chicago 78. Everything that it could bring and more. So here's some quotes from Jerry Reinsdorf, the birthday boy, Jerry mm-hmm. Reinsdorf. Our stadium will inject life and money into the area, which people have been talking about that for a long period of time in all different kinds of stadiums throughout all sports. We want to own the real estate around our stadium. Some teams do it, some teams don't. Some succeed while not doing it, and vice versa. We might have to move if there's a better offer elsewhere. We hear that quite a bit, the Oakland Athletics dealing with that situation. The economics of baseball have completely changed with top ball players signing contracts worth as much as $700 million, Reinsdorf said. At the location we're at now, we cannot generate the revenue needed to pay those salaries, said Reinsdorf, referring to the team's heavily residential Bridgeport home, a new space in a livelier downtown area with shops, bars, and other entertainment venues within walking distance should do better, he contends. And then here's my favorite one, Pat. Reinsdorf denied that the real problem is poor performance by his team. Even after winning the World Series in 2005, Reinsdorf said, we didn't crack the 3 million attendance mark. something that World Series winners routinely accomplish the following year. I think it was 2.9 million. So you and I probably should have gone to maybe five or six more games of the 2025 that we attended in 2006. So all that in a blender. What are your thoughts, Pat?
Well, my thoughts are, you know, Jerry hasn't changed his game in the 40 years he's owned this team. His game is, I'm going to first of all blame my fan base. I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that my fans hate me and this team as much as possible. I'm going to push them so far away. That's what I want to do. I never want to give them credit, never want to thank them for what they've done or how they've supported me. Let's bring up how they haven't supported this team. I do want to bring up, let's talk about, okay, not cracking the 2 million mark or the 3 million mark after winning the World Series. The team in the second half of the season that year, you know, pissed on their leg. You know, they imploded, really.
Yeah.
So again, I don't want to, that was a really good team. They had a really fantastic, I thought we were going back to back, you know, it's like at least make it back to the World Series. That was a fun team to watch in the first half. And they just lost it in the second half of the season that year. I'd also contend that it is really tough when you're talking about drawing fans and you play, you know, in not the area in terms of where the ballpark's at, but the area of the country where you're at, the beginning, whether you're a good team or not, April and early May games at home, if they're at night or during the day, it doesn't matter. Those cold, you're never going to draw very well during those games, whether you're a good team or not a good team. It's just crappy. I'm sorry. Who's going to want to sit out there? There's not 40,000 people that are going to pack a stadium in April and early May, and sometimes now the way it is now, into late May. So that I have a problem with. I don't understand why it's always the chicken and the egg with Jerry, right? If you guys will come out and support us, we'll invest more. Okay, did you invest more after you drew almost 3 million fans in that year? Did you ever look to improve? Have you ever looked into doing things that aren't costing you, you know, the millions of dollars in terms of the players on the field? Have you looked at other teams that have done it right, like the Rays, that don't spend millions of dollars, but to continually compete in division with the Boston Red Sox and the New York Yankees?
And for what I understand, their attendance isn't that great.
With horrible attendance, have you looked at that as an example of how you want to maybe run your organization, reinvest in developing a farm system, invest into scouts, invest into guys that are very savvy in business ops that can really make the most and get the best out of the players that you do have? So I think you and I would agree. I really don't care if you spend billions of dollars on players or not, but give me the best players that you can, develop them. And then if you have to, because you're so strapped for cash, move off of them, bring assets back in. Maybe you take a step back in years where you're not going to be as competitive, but then you're reloading your system and you're just churning it out year after year. I'm so tired of us being blamed for his issues and being an inadequate owner. And I'm going to steal something that Mark Silverman brought up on the air this week. And that's look at his other team. Look at the Chicago Bulls that have, you know, routinely been number one in the league in terms of attendance. And that organization is also run like shit. Don't tell me that you don't make a lot and your fans don't come out and support you and you're making tons of money and selling out that building all the time. Maybe not so much in the last couple of years, but ever since Jordan left, that place was packed. So there's examples around baseball in terms of you don't have to sell it every game to be competitive. And there's an example of a team that you already own that you're selling out most games that you continue to run that organization like a piece of shit. So stop. Please stop with your insanity.
You know, and I got to, and that was great, Pat. You're on fire, which I love, and you're right. And this is some of the stuff, you know, we just kind of vented about, you know, when we got together last night, and I know fans have been talking about all week long, and it's just a roll your eyes. It's just, are you kidding me? You know, with this stuff, I mean, you have not invested in the Chicago White Sox. You as a two team owner, you're worth, you have not gone out and played at the top of free agency. You have not gone out there and paid for pitching. You have not gone out there. We have not been a team, an organization that every free agency, when there are the big names talked about, our name is not under every player. Like, well, you always got to watch out for the White Sox. You know, they know what they need. They go out and they spend. It's a machine. You know, it's not how it is. It's really pathetic. I don't know the numbers from the Florida Marlins when they won their World Series, but I don't know attendance was that outstanding for them. They went out and they spent money. Mm-hmm. So just sickening, you know, to have this feeling of like how this owner plays this. And it's the same playbook from back in the late 80s. The articles are out there. And if you didn't live through that and you haven't read some of that, just those are simple searches. And the stuff that Jerry said and the games that he played with Florida, it's gross. It's absolutely gross. So, hey, the renderings are beautiful. Yeah, sure. It'd be great to have a ballpark that the rest of Major League Baseball talks about. It's like, you got to go to South Loop. You know, the White Sox have had, it is just unbelievable. Their village, the everything, the views, the angles, state of the art. Just, oh, that's number one. Sure, everybody wants to have that. But what does that do for the team? It's not going to be all of a sudden like Jerry's going to be like, oh, yeah, I guess I have to own up if he's still around owning the team. I guess I have to live up to my word and start spending now that we've got this new complex. That might take years to reap some of the benefits, right?
Yeah. I mean, I will play a little devil's advocate, though. I can understand his point. Just taking away from, you know, the fact that I can't win because of where we're at in Bridgeport. There are limitations in terms of, you know, revenue streams that are coming into the organization based on not owning everything around the stadium, right? Being a little bit of a disadvantage there. And so there are some valid points that he does have. You can maximize a lot more dollars if you were somewhere else. So that is all true. But the other portion is it is also true that you bring in, again, I've said it several times, every year, just because you open up your doors as a team, you're getting revenue sharing from the rest of Major League Baseball. Last year was $77 million. Their payroll last year was, I think, what was it? 100 and something million dollars. So they paid for the majority of their team salary and what they get from revenue sharing. They're going to get, I don't know what they're going to get this year, but I would imagine it's going to be in the $70 million range again this year, because the dollars usually don't go down in Major League sports. They only go up. So I just, $185 million, I think that was the case. So you're paying for, you know, at least more than half, if I'm doing my math right, you know, just in the revenue sharing dollars that you're bringing in. I just can't understand why he wants to, and other owners do it too, cry poor for owning a major league team. If it was really that bad of an investment for you and it really wasn't working out for you, wouldn't you think he would have got out of it 20 years ago? Wouldn't you think he would have went, you know what? This has really not been what I thought it was going to be. This isn't bear. Is it bear or boar? Isn't boar the fruit that I thought it would bear for me? I'm going to sell this off and collect whatever I can. And I'm going to still make a lot of money with selling this team off, but I'm just not making the money that I thought I would get when I got into this. So, but you can't fool us. You've been in it for so long. You can't tell me that you're not making any money. It's just, do you think we're stupid? Do you think we're honestly that stupid as people to think that you've made no money, that you're living in a box somewhere, that you have nothing, and baseball has robbed you of everything you have, but I'm going to continue to own the team.
It's a clever marketing, you know, play. It's, you know, we'll tease this at the beginning. We'll hint at maybe leaving to go to Nashville or out of Chicago, pull at the heartstrings of Sox fans that, you know, are really pot committed. You know, teams have been around for over 120 years, have pretty much played in the same area for that amount of time. And that neighborhood has, has supported them. You know, a fan base has been created. And when there is a team that gets us excited, a team that, you know, we feel, you know, we want to put our money towards to go see in person, Sox fans do it. They absolutely do it. It's just, it's been few and far between where we've had those opportunities, where we've had seasons where we've gotten excited because of the offseason that they've had, where tickets are flying off the shelf when they go on sale, or when the weather pops, school's out, this team's cooking because of the investment that was put into them, the dollars that was put into them, how it was built and constructed, you know, how aggressive they were. You see that uptick, you know, in attendance throughout the summer. And that place is rocking, especially on the weekends. It hasn't been like that. You know, Jerry, you know, in his organization, the top down stuff, it all starts at the top. Mm-hmm. And I've been really embarrassed as of late with how things have gone. So, you know, you tease that you might rip the team out of Chicago. Then there's the whole renderings. It gets everybody in a lather. It gets everybody excited, and they're beautiful. They really are. And I know, you know, everybody thinks like, you know, well, guaranteed rate. Absolutely. It's a dump. It's not a dump. There are worse stadiums in Major League Baseball. There are. It doesn't happen to be in people's most favorable areas for nightlife and skyline and all this other stuff. But as a stadium, it's just run really poorly. You know, how it's managed and security, of course, and getting in and out of the ballpark and concessions and all this other stuff. It's just, it's run horribly, but it's not a horrible stadium. You know, it's sure eventually it's going to be, you know, hey, we've got to just, you know, get a new ballpark. You know, that's just what happens. But, you know, and then you play this game of like, well, you know, there's a wonderful video out there. I watched it. I was telling you about it last night, and it's been bouncing around Twitter X especially. I don't know if he's an economist or what. It's a 4 minutes, and this gentleman is breaking down kind of like what essentially happens when an owner is looking for public funding. And no matter what sport, for a new stadium, you know, the reasons, the whys, kind of the bullet points. And it was brought up in this little video of how investing, having a state push money into a sports stadium, and it, to quote, like, it's going to help out our neighborhood. It's going to energize everything. Like, that's a good investment. It's traditionally a poor investment. That is not the right way to spend your state funding. You know, it's just... everything is backwards, you know, and you said, like, does Jerry essentially think Sox fans are stupid? You almost have to assume that, right, for him to play this all over again.
Well, stupid or can't read or don't know anything about, you know, history or what he's done before. He just thinks like, oh, these, I haven't talked about this in a long time. Why don't I just threaten to move the team? Maybe somebody forgot that I tried to do this before. Yeah, I don't know what else to say about Jerry and Matthew. I see your question. If the team moved out of Chicago, would you still be a Sox fan? Honestly, I don't know. I know I wouldn't become a Cubs fan. I know that. I couldn't do that. It would go against what I was born into. I suppose I love baseball. I don't know what else to who else I would root for.
So if they went to Nashville, Pat, and they were called like the Nashville White Sox. Mm-hmm. You know, if they kept the name White Sox, I don't know. I feel like I might want to follow them, but the fact that they're just not my local team, it'd be really difficult. And if they changed the name completely, you know, Nashville, I don't know what.
Maybe it'd be a blessing Nashville in disguise, chickens. Nick. You and I would be less angry. Maybe I'd be healthier. It might be a good thing.
Oh, for we'd us. Live longer. Absolutely. There's no question about that. I think we would add years to our life.
Sometimes the things that are best for you are not the things you necessarily want for yourself, but in the long run, it's better for you.
Well, the Stones, you know, Mick Jagger, Keith Richards, the Rolling Stones, of course, you've heard of them.
I have heard of them. I'm not looking at you blankly. I'm wondering where you're going with this, but
you know, don't get what you want, you get what you need.
Oh, there you go. Thank you.
And maybe that's like, we would need that for just our health. It's bizarre to even think about it. It's bizarre to even try to rationalize it and come up with a game plan of what I would do, who I would turn to. Absolutely not to the Northsiders. Give me a break. That's not even a there's no even second question thought on that. I just hope it never comes to it, you know, and I just don't see how that makes sense financially to leave Chicago to go to Nashville.
It doesn't make any sense to leave the fourth biggest and maybe the third biggest in baseball sports market to go to Nashville. It doesn't, on the surface, and you and I are not, we're not the smartest people in the world. I'm certainly not. It doesn't seem like it would make a lot of business sense to Nashville. Makes a lot of sense for an expansion team, you know, or one of the 20 teams that are in Florida to move to, you know, or something like that. But I don't think it makes sense for the Chicago White Sox. And I'd like to know, like, do we know, like, when this is going to be decided upon? Like, how long are these conversations going to be had? Is there a deadline? That's what I'm curious
there was
about.
A deadline this spring. You know, I know Pritzker just, you know, talked about the budget proposal. And I thought there was a deadline. It could be May. I could be very wrong on that. I feel like that's why Jerry was hustling down to Springfield in the leathers. To talk people up.
Leathers, like he's in Ashless Chaps or something. The birthday boy in his leathers.
He's in the new, baseball pants. In his leather jacket.
Oh, oh God. I have to go to bed soon. I don't know what I don't know how I'm gonna sleep thinking about Jerry in the see-through pants.
Well, then I should probably leave you with the Pedro Grifol quote of the week. This isn't a terribly recent one. This was from last week. We just didn't, it came after the last episode, and I wanted to talk about it because I found it to be so hilarious. I did have an opportunity to talk about it with Danny Miller on Future Sox on Tuesday, but this will be new for you and I. So here's your Pedro Grifol quote of the week. We had a great offseason. Grifol said when he was asked for tangible reasons why the Sox will be better. From a roster perspective, we had a really great offseason. And from a preparation perspective, we had a great offseason. We did exactly what we needed to do to prepare ourselves to execute this week starting on day one. Our staff did a really incredible job of creating relationships and communicating with these guys. I've never been part of a camp where I've seen adjustments to pitch grips and mechanics on the first bullpen session of the spring. That's your Pedro Grifol quote of the week.
Great. Everything's great.
It's tough to read these straight face. Talk about somebody that just seems like they're held hostage and they have to say this because their captors are watching every move and listening to everything they say. I knew I had to talk about that one. That one was wild.
That was, that's good. I love it. I'm glad they got everything done that they needed to get done, and it was all great. And it showed from, the first game, how great the off season was.
Well, we'll have a large collection of games to talk about next week. You know, here it is, baseball just about every single day. I'm looking forward to seeing what Crochet does. I'm sure it's going to be very limited, but I think you can tell with some of these pitchers, you know, and you can tell maybe even how they bounce back, any lingering, you know, as spring training rolls on, are there limitations, you know, the frustrations? We saw some of that last spring. There were frustrations from pitchers. So keep an eye on that. Always a pleasure, my friend.
Nick, one of these years, let's do a fun podcast where we talk about positive things.
This is fun. About it. This is,
I know. It's still fun for us.
It's fun.
I don't. And you know what? Shout out to all the people that the comments. Yeah. You guys were on fire today. Fantastic. Yeah. Good job.
Yeah. Awesome comments. Really appreciate everybody jumping in here on Sunday night. Subscribe to the Good Guys Talk Back YouTube channel. Get all your notifications, everything set up, and join us on Sunday nights. Come on in, add to the conversation. We're all crazy here. You've got to be absolutely insane right now to be a White Sox fan. We welcome it. You know, more the merrier. It's good to just rub shoulders with like-minded people. So thank you so much for jumping in. We're on Twitter X at Good Guys TB. You can find the podcast absolutely everywhere you find your podcasts. For Pat Hester, I am Nick Morawski. Until next time, go Sox.